Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Who gets to be in the media and who doesn't? That's the topic of this edition of Radio Curious when we visit with Jeff Cohen, co-founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Jeff has been a commentator on Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC. He offers us an insider's critique of mainstream media. We visited in the studios of Radio Curious on March 13, 2012, and began our conversation when I asked him to discuss the subterfuge that exists in the media.
The main thing I encourage listeners and viewers and readers of news media to be conscious of is what's the spectrum of viewpoints presented. I traveled in the Soviet Union when it still existed, and no one believed the media because it all came from one perspective, and they never had the pretense of two points of view. So it was not very effective propaganda because no one bought it. In our country, we often have two points of view, and it's often the pretense of two points of view. The classic example was during the first fight over healthcare reform in the early 1990s, NPR had a former Democratic Congress member and a former Republican Congress member allegedly debating the issue of healthcare reform. Both of them were against single-payer Medicare for all and said so. What NPR didn't tell their listeners is that both the Democrat and Republican former Congress member were major consultants and lobbyists for the health insurance industry. So what you typically get in the U.S. media, mainstream media, corporate media, is two points of view that aren't often that far apart. You know, the spectrum in our country is way broader than the spectrum, say, within the household of Mary Madeline and James Carville. There's a spectrum of views that go outside of a Democratic Party hack and a Republican Party hack, because sometimes the two parties are very close on certain economic issues, certain foreign policy issues, certain civil liberties issues.
There's a connection there that I'd like you to explain, and that is the two that you just discussed.
Yeah, well, James Carville is a leading propagandist for the Democratic Party. His team's always right. His team's flawless. Mary Madeline, his wife, is a major propagandist for the Republican Party. They're always right. They can do no wrong. And what happens on CNN and a lot of the media is they bring on a hack from either side, giving the party line, and they believe that's a debate. The reality is, you think about what phrases should the listeners ears perk up on and the skepticism go off. When you hear the phrase bipartisan compromise, that's when I hold onto my wallet because I'm probably about to be fleeced, or I grab onto the U.S. Constitution because it's about to be gouged. You know, what we get in most of the mainstream media, especially like NPR and PBS and CNN, is the elites of the two parties over and over. And a lot of issues, they don't disagree on drug war. They don't disagree. On Patriot Act, passed with only one dissenting vote. On invading Iraq, it was a Republican thrust, and all the leaders of the Democratic Party supported it. On NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, it was bipartisan. So a lot of the worst stuff, the deregulating of Wall Street in the late 1990s, well, we had a Democratic president pushing it with a Republican Congress, and Wall Street got everything they wanted. And then 8 years later, the global economy crashed. That was bipartisan. So it's just not enough to talk to the elites of the two major parties and assume you've covered the issue. There's a lot of experts on all sides of an issue. There's a lot of average members of the public who have different perspectives than the elites of the two parties. And so that's what people need to be conscious of. You know, who's the debate? Where's the debate? Is there a real debate?
Let's talk about raising the consciousness. And how is that done?
Raising consciousness of the average news consumer?
The critical thinking.
Yes. Well, it's important for listeners to be skeptical, whether they're listening to Pacifica Radio or NPR or PBS or reading the New York Times. You have to be conscious of the cheerleading for bipartisanship. It may be good from the point of view of the news elites. Sometimes it's not so great for the public.
Let's talk about that cheerleading In other words, what I'm hoping that you can share with our listeners, elements of critical thinking, when they hear phrases, when we are told certain things that are either absolutes or givens, how can we challenge their truth and veracity?
In the eyes of the media elite, any bipartisan deal is good. When the media says the word reform, in the last 10, 15 years, reform in elite media has often been deregulation. It's often been union busting. But from the perspective of elite media, that's what reform is. In the old days, reform was things were changed that brought more justice, more inclusion of working class or middle class individuals, but that's not what it's become lately. These phrases we hear all the time, a pro-Western government or a U.S. ally. You know, for decades, we kept being told that Egypt was a moderate regime. Egypt was pro-Western. Egypt was a U.S. ally. Well, how is it pro-Western to be torturing your own citizens and to not have a parliament? I always thought the West was equivalent to, you know, democracy, parliaments, elections. But as long as a foreign government, a third world government, a developing country's government is allied with the U.S. in some way, they get a pass and they get all these nice sounding things like pro-Western and moderate.
Well, the pass comes from the corporate media.
Yes. But it comes from the corporate media because they take their signs from the government. When it comes to foreign policy, the media are very much echoes of the government. And study after study has been done on this. How many of the sources of big, big elite national media are unnamed sources that are government sources? The whole hoax about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction based on unnamed government sources, unnamed White House sources, unnamed intelligence sources. At FAIR, we've done study after study showing that in coverage of foreign policy, you can hardly slide a thin paper between the government's perspective and the perspective of the corporate mainstream media.
Talk to us about FAIR.
FAIR is an acronym of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a nonprofit group I started in 1986 with people like Norman Solomon and Martin Lee. We study who gets on the air and who doesn't, who gets on NPR and who doesn't, who gets on PBS and who doesn't, who gets in the New York Times and who doesn't. And when you do these kinds of studies, you realize that on issue after issue, we were getting a corporate perspective. I remember we studied Nightline for every one labor perspective. Discussing economics, they had something like 8 corporate perspectives. When you study NPR and PBS, the same thing. So FAIR was set up to study who gets access to the big media and who doesn't, what points of view are never heard. And that gets back to my spectrum argument. You always hear what's put forward as a hawk point of view and a dove point of view, but the dove is often for intervention at a slower rate or militarism, but not quite as big. And that's what passes for discussion. The anti-war viewpoints were virtually excluded during and in advance of every military intervention. Right before the Iraq invasion, the two most important weeks were the 1 week before and the 1 week after Colin Powell went to the UN and gave his speech, which was full of inaccuracies and exaggerations about why.
And later retracted.
Yes, why we had to invade Iraq and why we had to invade soon. And he's holding up the vial. During those 2 weeks, there were something like 300 and some sources on the nightly TV news, NBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS. And of all those sources, only 3 represented an anti-war perspective. It's less than 1%.
Is it fair to lump NPR, CNN, and CBS together when you pose the question, who gets on those outlets and who doesn't?
Yes, because when we've empirically studied them, sometimes for months and months at a time, every single guest, for months and months at a time, there's no distinction between NPR and, say, ABC News. They have the same people. On NPR, you get to talk longer, but it's the same corporate think tanks, same narrow spectrum from center to right. It's a spectrum that I say goes from General Electric to General Motors. That's the spectrum.
Then let's talk about who doesn't get on and why.
Yeah. Clearly, the anti-war perspective is excluded from mainstream media.
How would you characterize the anti-war perspective?
Well, the anti-war perspective prior to the Iraq invasion, for example, were those...
How about prior to the Iran invasion?
Right, same thing. It's the same people. It's people that actually know the region, often can speak the language, can speak Arabic or can speak Farsi, actually have been in country, have sources that are broader than the, the Beltway elite. And those are the people that don't get on. Let's face it. There were a lot of experts who were saying Iraq doesn't have weapons of mass destruction. And they didn't get on. We proved it scientifically, empirically, at FAIR. There are people today saying that the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Association, which has the inspectors, they don't believe Iran has a nuclear weapons program today. And if you listen to CBS News or PBS, they're telling you about Iran's nuclear weapons program. No, they have a nuclear program, clearly. But the experts who will come on and objectively say, no, we have no evidence they have a nuclear weapons program or have made a decision to go forward with nuclear weapons, those experts are excluded. If it wasn't for Hans Blix being the head of an agency that happened to be going back and forth, he wouldn't have gotten on, and he was distorted.
Jeff, let's talk about the state of the art of public radio in the United States now.
If you're talking about public radio stations, they often do great local programming, and they have alternative and diverse voices. It's wonderful. If you're talking about NPR's national news, I think it's a national disgrace. They completely accepted the lies in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. They're not questioning a lot of the distortion now that there's war drums beating over Iran. You just don't have the questioning in NPR's national news that you do if you listen to public radio in Western Europe or other countries where it really is more independent.
Let's talk about the local stations. Are you familiar with them in general as to what they can do, should do, and are self-constrained to do?
Right. Well, I believe there's just too much self-censorship, period.
What do you mean? What's self-censorship?
People are afraid, I think, because of the timidity in NPR nationally, a lot of local stations that, have a very diverse, sometimes an independent or progressive community, they're afraid of going too far away from the standard set by NPR nationally, which is standard of timidity and centrism and ultra balance. And you know why public broadcasting was set up? I mean, and public television that had this Carnegie Commission, which said, we need a place where America can see itself whole in all its diversity, quote unquote, another plank, a forum for debate and controversy. Who's more controversy averse than public TV at the national level or public radio at the national level? This was another thing in the Carnegie Commission. Give voice to the voiceless. When FAIR has studied public TV and public radio, it's the same corporate voices. It's the same corporate-funded think tanks. Some ally with the Dems, some ally with the Republicans. It's a narrow spectrum of elite opinion. And public broadcasting was set up to give voice to the voiceless.
Interesting phrase, controversy adverse.
Yes, no doubt. I think that's the best way of describing. Why? Because in other countries, public broadcasting has insulated funding. In our country, the members of Congress threaten to turn it on and off, especially turn it off when there's something they don't like. So because we don't have insulated funding of public broadcasting, it's just timid. And you don't hear that if you go to Sweden, Holland, Norway, Denmark, Germany, France. They have vibrant public broadcasting because they have insulated funding that can't be turned off because a politician heard something they don't like.
So then are you placing the switch in the hands of members of Congress or in the hands of the local station?
Well, I just believe the local stations need to get bolder because, you know, local stations are the place where you have innovation. Thank God for local stations, local NPR stations, having more diverse voices and local programmers that aren't afraid to push the envelope.
So then, given the information that's out now, using Iran as a current example in the winter of 2012, how is one to make hopefully an informed decision?
Yeah, the only way to make an informed decision is to go online and listen to independent perspectives.
For example?
Well, I think one group that's been covering it, well, one website is commondreams.org. Another one is Truth Dig. Another one is Truth Out.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting in the studios of Radio Curious with Jeff Cohen, who was an organizer of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. This is Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Jeff, what brings you to Ukiah?
I came to this area because one of my closest friends for 30 years, Norman Solomon, is running a very unconventional campaign for U.S. Congress.
Jeff, let's talk about you. What motivates you to do the work that you do? And journalism professor at Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York, trying to light the fires of young people to get into fairness and accuracy in reporting.
I think, you know, what motivates me is when you look at this country and you see, you know, our media seems to get dumber and more corporate all the time. Our mainstream politics seems to get dumber and more corporate all the time. There's one bright spot in society that just keeps looming in the last 10, 15 years, and that's the independent media. You know, independent media are growing. Thanks to the internet, we have the ability of muckraking authors can put their book on Amazon and you get bloggers to promote the book. Independent documentary filmmakers, thanks to the internet, are having big reach. So I'm excited. What keeps me motivated and trying to get young people interested is there's this new ability of young journalists to strike out on their own and compete with the big players in the media thanks to the internet. So it's exciting for me. What motivates me is journalism's the most noble profession. Where would our country be if it wasn't for muckraking and heroic journalists that have exposed abuse and brought about reform? And in the last 10, 15 years, we had a real flowering of it. Remember during the Bush administration, the big scandal around the White House was firing U.S. attorneys for political reasons across the country. That wasn't exposed by the New York Times. That wasn't the Washington Post like 30, you'd expect 30 or 40 years ago. That's not who brought down the attorney general. The person who brought down the attorney general was a blogger for the independent media outlet known as Talking Points Memo, Joshua Marshall of Talking Points Memo. So I'm teaching my students that this is an exciting time to be a journalist. The mainstream media are laying off journalists by the thousands, but independents are forming small groups and local groups and online outlets, and they're doing a great job of watchdogging authority.
Using the Washington Post as an example, what changed them from being the muckraking form of media journalists to the way they are now, if that's the characterization of what you're saying?
It's exactly what I'm saying. And I mean, it was a long, slow process. The high point for mainstream media was the mid-70s, which I think you're referring to. Woodward and Bernstein brought down a sitting president in 1974, Richard Nixon. It's been a steady, slow erosion where mainstream media got closer and closer to the government elite and more integrated into the corporate structure. The Washington Post is floundering in terms of their journalism, income and revenue and profits, and they make a lot of money from like textbooks, and they make a lot of, you know, they've become all a little bit timid. They've lost their mission. The mission in some mainstream outlets was actually journalism. Now the people that run mainstream outlets tend to be bean counters. They don't come even with journalism degrees. They come with, you know, MBAs. The journalists no longer are in charge of journalism. Most journalists in mainstream are working for big, big conglomerates. The newspapers that had been doing some good work in the 60s and 70s have become parts of huge chains. McClatchy, Knight Ridder, Gannett. The corporatization of mainstream media has really been, I think, the death of mainstream journalism. But it's been the birth of independent alternatives.
Let's stop and talk about that. The death and the birth. Where is corporate journalism going from your perspective?
It's going to get more tabloid, more yelling and screaming.
Less content, more emotion?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yes, more emotion, less content, more cheapness. There's nothing cheaper for television news, for example, than park their cameras outside of a celebrity trial and have the lawyers come in who all want to see themselves on TV and pontificate for free for hours about a trial that has really little meaning. I mean, what does it matter what happens with Lindsay Lohan when people are losing their homes by the millions and people are starving across the globe and the U.S. military machine is involved in all these countries in active wars? Does it really matter that Lindsay Lohan is in trouble with the law anymore? Well, if you watch CNN, yes. Remember, if you do real journalism, there's sometimes repercussion. If you go after a powerful corporation, they're going to go after you. If you go after a powerful sitting president, they may come after you. And so this could be more tabloidism, more cheap thrills, less substance. I mean, I listen to Amy Goodman almost every day on Democracy Now! And I feel like, wow, I spent 1 hour. Look at what I learned about that foreign country, and this social issue that I've never seen in a mainstream TV news show. So the great news is that in this decline of mainstream journalism, because of short-term profits, because the corporate owners are so close to the government elite, and because journalism can get you into trouble, the place to find real hard-hitting journalism is often, you know, among the Josh Marshalls at Talking Points Memo, who brought down the Attorney General of Bush, or it's Amy Goodman. One of the things I do at Ithaca, at the Park Center for Independent Media, every year we give away the Izzy Award, named after I.F. Izzy Stone, the great muckraker from the 1950s and 60s who campaigned against Joe McCarthy and campaigned for racial equality and campaigned against wars based on lies, especially the Vietnam War and even the Korean War. And so we have this award, and we're giving new generations of people are learning about Izzy Stone and learning that there are journalists today walking in the path of Izzy Stone, their independent journalist path.
So you're moving towards my next question, which is, what is the future of independent news and independent muckraking compared to the death of the corporate media?
There's no doubt that the collapse of mainstream media is really helping independent media find an audience. The failures of the mainstream they push consumers to look for alternatives. You know, BBC executives were saying in 2002 that they were stunned about how many Americans were starting to watch BBC. Why? Because they didn't trust the TV networks, including PBS, on the run-up to the Iraq War. From 2002 onward, you've seen independent outlets just grow and grow and grow as people become increasingly exasperated with the fluff and celebrity worship and war cheerleading and that you get from the mainstream. And it's a question of whether the average citizen, the average consumer, is going to be aggressive and look for alternatives, because they're much easier to find now, thanks to the internet. Everything they know is online. They're not picking up newspapers and magazines, and they're not watching a lot of mainstream TV. So there's a lot of opportunities for reaching a new generation.
A conversation for another day would be, what do you think would happen if a virus can destroy the online accessibility?
There's no doubt that a big threat to independent media is if we lose net neutrality, which, you know, right now prevents your big internet provider, and the five big ones are like AT&T, Time Warner, Comcast, you know, if they can can steer you just to the websites that they own or make a profit from, then yes, independent media will really be disadvantaged. This great trend I'm talking about will be stopped in its tracks.
Well, Jeff Cohen, it's wonderful to sit here and watch you. Most of the people who we visit with we talked to on the phone. But I can see your visage changing from excitement to dismay just in the past 3 minutes. And before we close, I'd like to ask you about a eureka moment, an aha moment in your life that changed your perspective or that you still live by.
Right. One of the most important moments in my life was when I was 19, and I was in Detroit where I grew up. And the Vietnam veterans against the war had gathered from around the country, and they held hearings where they talked about atrocities they'd witnessed or committed, rapes they'd seen, you know, the stuff about what the U.S. military had done to the Vietnamese people, civilians, that the American public didn't know because of media bias. And I'm sitting there watching this. I'm seeing these soldiers, these vets crying, and almost no mainstream media covered it. And one camera came. And during the height of like a really emotional testimony from Vietnam vets, this is like 1971, they pack up and leave. And the Vietnam vets start yelling at them and booing. What are you doing? And they packed up and they didn't cover the story. And I remember saying at that moment, you know, I'm going to become a media critic. That here's these people that have firsthand accounts of why the Vietnamese hate us and why we can't win that war. And why it's an immoral war. And you couldn't get it in the mainstream media. And these Vietnam vets, many of whom went to Vietnam because all they knew about Vietnam came from television, where it was made to be a noble project to bring democracy to the Vietnamese. They had something to say, and I watched their anger at the mainstream media when I was 19, and it put me on this course where ultimately I started the Media Watch group FAIR.
So you've been on this course for 40 years.
Yes.
What would you like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
I want to spend more time with my two daughters. You know, they've seen someone that dad's always working. And just, I want to spend more time with them. That's my commitment. That's the thing I'd like to do more of. In terms of professional, I've written the books. I've been on TV, national TV all the time. And, you know, it just doesn't matter.
And finally, Jeff Cohen, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
Well, the one, it may sound trite, but the book that I recommend everywhere I go and I'm asked is Howard Zinn's book, A People's History of the United States. And I recommend it because it's an optimistic book. It's almost a spiritual book. It shows that everything that made our country better was the often unsung heroes who saw something wrong, risked a lot, improved or expanded democracy. And what's inspiring about Howard Zinn in that book, People's History of the United States, is that he teaches in that book that even when you think it's the darkest in American history and you think it's unchangeable, some group comes out of nowhere and there's a new movement that forms and somehow the United States moves forward.
Jeff Cohen, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Jeff Cohen is a co-founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and the author of Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media, published in 2006. The book he recommends is A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. This interview was recorded in March 2012. All Radio Curious programs are free at our website, radiocurious.org. Our phone is 707-462-6541. Email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onestad is our associate producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening. Thank you.